This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on October 27th, 2016. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
The open meeting of the Federal Election Commission for Thursday, October 27, 2016 will come to order. Before we pick up the agenda items, we have a motion for late submitted documents. Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to suspend the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents in order to consider the late submission of the following documents. Agenda document number 16-32-B, draft B, advisory opinion 2016-12, citizen super PAC. Agenda document 16-53B, designated as draft B, draft advisory opinion 2016-14, Libertarian Party of Alabama et al. And agenda document 16-55A, proposed amendments to Directive 52.
Is there any discussion on that motion? If none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Madam Secretary, that motion carries by a vote of 6-0. Before we turn to agenda item number one, let me just make one scheduling note. Item four, which is proposed amendments to Directive 52, that there has been a request to hold that matter over till the next open meeting. And item number five, which is the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on the Conservative Campaign Committee, that matter has been resolved and no longer needs to be considered at this meeting. So we will turn to Draft Advisory Opinion 2016-12, Citizen Super PAC, that was submitted by Chris Gober and Troy McCurry. We have Jessica Selenkoff and Nevin Stepanovic from the Office of General Counsel to give a presentation. And Mr. McCurry, if you would like to join us at the witness table. We're much more used to you being on this side of the dais rather than on that one, but welcome to the hot seat. And good to see you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Vice Chairman, Commissioners. Good to be here. Yes, it's quite a different view from this side.
Ms. Selenkoff, when you're ready, please proceed with your presentation.
Thank you, Chairman Peterson. Good morning, Commissioners. Agenda documents 1652A and B present two draft advisory opinions in response to a request by Citizen Super PAC. Citizen Super PAC has a designated page of its website on which it seeks contributions in support of a specific distribution of a video advocating the election of Representative Joe Heck, a candidate for U.S. Senate. Citizen Super PAC proposes to email Representative Heck's committee to notify it of the video and to ask it to take a number of actions with respect to the webpage detailing the ad's distribution strategy, such as posting a link to that page or soliciting its supporters to contribute in support of the ad. Both drafts conclude that Citizen Super PAC's paid ad would be a coordinated communication if Representative Heck's committee took the actions requested by Citizen Super PAC, because that would indicate Representative Heck's assent to Citizen Super PAC's suggested distribution of the ad. Both drafts further conclude that if Representative Heck assents, Citizen Super PAC may not engage in the proposed activity because, as an independent expenditure-only committee, it may not make contributions to candidates. Draft B also expressly concludes that Citizen Super PAC may inform Representative Heck of its activities. The Commission received one comment on the drafts from the requester, and we're available to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you for that presentation. At the outset, I should mention, before we open it up for questions of counsel, questions of requester, we received comments from Mr. McCurry and Mr. Gober late last night, indicating that there was some confusion about that was reflected in both drafts A and B regarding the nature of the question that was being asked. And in light of that fact, and that both drafts were premised on questions that the requester said were subtly different than what you were actually asking. I don't think that this is going to be amenable to being resolved today because we don't have any draft before us that that properly tees that up. And so we're going to need some more time to do so. Having said that, our next open meeting is until after the election. Obviously, you wanted this to be queued up and resolved before the election. So the only option that we might have is to discuss this and maybe resolve this on tally beforehand. We'll have to discuss what's going to be the best and most efficient way to doing it amongst the commissioners. But I think, notwithstanding that we don't have a draft available, I still think that there is some need for discussion on this issue, and that commissioners may want to weigh in and may want to ask specific questions of you. So why don't we proceed with that that discussion, and I will open up the floor to anyone who has a question of either Ms. Selenkoff, Mr. McCurry, or just has a point that they want to make about this particular request. Perhaps no one does. But I guess the one thing that I want to ask is that the analysis in both drafts looks at this from the perspective of requester suggestion, not requester suggestion of the candidate, but a requester suggestion of the third party payor, and whether or not a candidate is assenting to that requester suggestion. As far as I know, and maybe counsel can correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not aware of any prior advisory opinions or MERS. There may be some out there, but I'm not aware of which ones those are that have really teased this issue out at any length. And so there is some question under the clarification that you've provided, what is needed to meet or to qualify as assent? How affirmative of an action does a candidate need to take in order to for assent to be established? And the flip side of that is, how expressed does the request or suggestion from the third-party payer need to be in order for that prong to be triggered? So I don't know if you've had some time to think about that. That the first draft has been out there for a while. I guess I'd first seek your thoughts on what you believe is required for assent to be established under the coordination rule.
Sure. So, yeah, I've actually put quite a lot of thought into this, and it is absolutely an esoteric, I mean, it's very, very much in the weeds here, an esoteric question asking about one standard and one prong of the coordination test, and that is the request and suggestion standard. Obviously, it's treated a little differently in the regs than some of the other ones are, and it really does beg the question is, what is a request or suggestion? It seems to me that through the E and J to this regulation that well, for one, to take a step back. So, in our opinion, in order for there to be an assent, there actually needs to be a request or suggestion beforehand. So, if there's not a request or suggestion, then what is anybody assenting to? It seems like nothing. So, to the predicate question being is, what is a request or suggestion? It seems to us that the E and J, at least when it was written in 2003. So, granted, that's quite a long time ago. Quite a lot's happened legally since then, but according to that E&J, for something to be considered a request or suggestion, as that term is defined in the regs, it needs to be something more explicit and private, something more than just a broad pronouncement. There is a difference between something that is a private request or suggestion or a public request or suggestion. Now, that's not to say dealing with publicly available information, which is part of this request as well, where all of the information is publicly available, it's on the internet. But for something to be a request or suggestion per the E&J to the reg, and also taking into consideration Christian Coalition case that dealt with this issue in one aspect, that for something to be a request or suggestion to trip this standard and trip this prong, it needs to be something that's private. Once again, maybe not something that's a formal collaboration, but something that's at least not a broad pronouncement by a candidate. Hey, I really think somebody should be running ads talking about taxes out of speech. That under the E&J, that is definitely not a request or suggestion. So our question is, we found no real MERS that dealt with this, no real AOs that have dealt with this. So hence the reason we're here asking the advisory opinion request is really kind of twofold. One, is the E&J still good law? Well, obviously we think that it is, but you know, regulated community experience in past years has suggested that sometimes it's not, so we wanted verification that what the E&J says is actually still true. The second part of that is, does it matter or not? Obviously, in our opinion, it does not, whether that's these types of things are done digitally instead of in a traditional campaign sense on a speech. Is somebody saying, oh, wow, I really think, you know, there should be ads out there talking about taxes. Is that any different than someone on their Facebook page or on their website saying, man, taxes are a really important issue this year? Obviously, we think that's a distinction without a difference, but we realize that the Commission's not always been on the same page with that. So I'm not sure if that answers fully your question, Mr. Chairman, but you know, we do think that the difference between something being a request or suggestion that trips coordination is much different than a request or suggestion in broad, that there really needs to be some sort of, as per the E&J, some sort of private sense, some sort of private conversation, a select audience. And in order for there to be an assent to request or suggestion, there has to be a predicate, request or suggestion.
I think you you obviously identify where the crux of this issue lies, and you know, from my perspective, the NJ still is good law, but there is some there are still some unanswered questions in the NJ about what constitute a request or suggestion and what constitutes a assent to that request or suggestion. So you mentioned that such a request or suggestion needs to be private, not public. How express does that communication, if it is a private, do you think that it needs to be in order for it to be deemed a request or suggestion?
I think it needs to be pretty specific. I think it needs to be something that is, you know, for if it, a private conversation that deals with a specific target, a specific set of facts or elements of a communication. You know, I think, you know, and this isn't in our request, but if we're, you know, just for the exercise, I would say that if someone's sitting with a private group of donors in a small select audience and says, you know, wow, you know, taxes are really important this year, I know there's going to be a lot of ads about that. That's a lot different than saying, wow, you really need to go after so-and-so's proposal to increase the marginal tax rate or something like that. There needs to be something more specific than a broad conversation just about an issue. There is a twofold nature to that, that there's a selectivity to the audience, how small of the audience is, that kind of goes to the public or private divide that I was just discussing, but I also think there needs to be some more specificity to the actual request or suggestion itself. So it's almost a two-factor instance. How small of the audience is it to make it a request or suggestion, and what is actually being requested or suggested? Is it just something broad of nature, or something that's more specific?
Yeah, and that's the question I have. In this case, you you propose, at least one of your proposals is sending an email to the candidate. So I assume that's a private email to a fairly select audience, and with a link to a page that includes specific ads and a specific fundraising mechanism. And in question three, as I understand your question, you're not specifically saying, put this on your website, forward this link to your email list, or specifically asking them to raise money for this ad. That's more of question two. But in light of the specific ad and the specific fundraising kind of mechanism for that particular ad, is sending that hyperlink, would that be considered a suggestion for the distribution of that particular communication? That's one of the questions that's arisen in my mind since your letter came in last night, and that's one that at least I'm having to have to tease through, because the ENJ doesn't give us something really firm to hold on to with respect to that question.
Sure. So in our opinion, so it really comes down to it, and I didn't include this, and I'm happy to do this. It seems like part of the confusion here was, well, there's a whole backstory why I think there's a lot of this confusion. But nevertheless, I think that it's a simple email. I mean, it really is. I printed this. I didn't include it with the letter last night, but it's simply a to, from, and nothing in the text of the body except a hyperlink to a public URL. And that's what's suggested in question one. So the first question is that email a request or suggestion? We think not. We do think that draft B's answer to question one is correct, that merely informing someone, and that clear as day out of Christian Coalition, merely informing a third party of some of its activities, even if they're pretty specific, in and of itself is not a request or suggestion. So if Christian Coalition is still good law, and we think that it is, then that should hold. So And once again, is doing it via email different than doing it in person? We think not. So I do think that that's where draft B's answer to question one is correct. But I think for both drafts, not to mention the confusion, I think the ordering of the questions really matters. It matters for my client because it's a temporal process here. Question one is dealing with what is going on before the project airs, before the project has reached its fundraising goal, its goal in order to air. Can my client send an email that just says, this is on the internet, and that's it? Is that a request or suggestion? We think not. We think that's merely informing. But even if it is a request or suggestion, we don't think that it is, but even if it is a authorized committee's response to that email, putting it on their own website, a link, or we used website, it could be anything, blast it out in an email, or put it on their website, or put it on their Facebook page, or put it on Twitter, or whatever. If they publicly blast out that link, that public URL link, either one because of the email that was sent in question one, or two, just did it on their own under the Scalia terminology of this kind of happenstance. So we get that this is esoteric, and we get that it's exceptionally nuanced, but I would hold that, one, sending this type of email, literally, once again, just a link in the text of the body, that is not a request or suggestion. I have a hard time seeing that. Christian Coalition says that it's not. It's just merely informing. But even if it is, how is a public assent saying, here, this is great, or nothing, just includes the link, post the link on the Facebook page? Is that a request or suggestion per the regs? We think not. Once again, that's a public assent to a in arguendo request or suggestion. I think the regs, at least how they're written in the E&J, how they're explained and justified, it is not.
So just to make sure that I understand your argument, are you saying that not only does the request or suggestion need to be private, but the assent needs to be private as well? That assent, correct me if I misunderstood. That's what I thought you may have said right there, because that's the question that I'm grappling with, is that let's just assume that sending the hyperlink is a request or suggestion. Let's just, for sake of this analysis, let's turn then to what constitutes assent. As you point out in the explanation and justification for this rule, it says the commission did not propose that the coordination could result where a payer merely informs a candidate or political party committee of its plans. Rather, a candidate or a political party committee will have accepted an in-kind contribution only if there is assent to the suggestion, and then says by rejecting the suggestion, the candidate or political party committee may unilaterally avoid any coordination. I think the rejection language I view more as a safe harbor. I don't think that
absolutely.
The lack of rejection constitutes assent. But when there's more than just merely informing, if we were to say that that's merely informing, once the candidate takes that and runs with it in some way, and like you said, either distributes that through email, puts it up on their website, or sends out a solicitation within the limits, does taking some sort of a public action like that constitute assent? Or does assent need to be something more affirmative and some sort of actual communication with the person who is the third-party payor? There's not a lot in the E&J on that particular issue. There's not much in our subsequent enforcement and administrative history that really answers that question. So that's the reason why I pose that to you.
Sure. And I would say that it seems to me that our reading of the E&J to classify assent to a request or suggestion being the same as a request or suggestion, assent is treated the same in all aspects. So if you accept the premise of the E&J that for a request or suggestion, it needs to be somewhat private, needs to be restricted towards audience and specific in nature, and this next part being assents are treated the same as requests or suggestions themselves, then to me, the logical extension of that is, then yes, and the assent needs to be both private and somewhat specific as well. And so and this is strange because it's the internet, right? And all of this, what we're trying to talk about is online, but I think with the ENJ, at least when it was written in 2003, and post-internet, but not nearly as predominant as the internet is today, is that, you know, request, if you're in a small group and someone says, you know, hey, I really liked, you know, hey, we're really thinking about running some ads that really, you know, attack your opponent. And the what the ENJ seems to be dealing with is the candidate there saying, that sounds great, I think you should do that, right? If the candidate turned around and then went to a public meeting and started talking about, oh, I really need to see some good ads, we think that's something different. The ENJ seems to treat assent, the ENJ seems to treat assents in the same prism and analysis as it does requests and suggestions themselves. So once again, we appreciate the nuance here and that it's the internet is somewhat, it makes it somewhat strange, but for an assent to be treated differently than a request or suggestion seems counter to the language of the ENJ.
Okay. That's all I have. Commissioner Goodman?
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, so going back to your physical world analogy, so I'm the IE maker, and I go up to the candidate, and I say, here is our ad. And the candidate, then turn around and give a speech and say, Goodman's group has got a really good ad. You all should get behind it and support Goodman's ad. That's not assent in your analysis?
Commissioner, no, I don't think so. And let me explain why. Because what would have happened had the third party group not said that? So because the third-party group merely informs the candidate, mm-hmm. Once again, this is in a private setting, once the third-party group informs the candidate, then the candidate has to muzzle himself? Mm-hmm. I was going to go up there and talk about how great this ad was, but now that they told me in this little meeting, I have to say no, I can't say that anymore? I just don't think that stands for quite a lot of reasons and broad first principles. But two, I just think that that's not how the ENJ and the way that it's written seems to either at best not address the issue. In our opinion, it does and says, no, there needs to be a private conversation here. So, I understand that you think that like, that you possibly think that that is assent, and maybe that is in a layman's term. Sure. In a layman, sure, but so my mom still thinks coordination is a lot of things, that it's not satisfying the three prongs. I mean, how many times have we had to deal with that issue? But so yeah, maybe something is assent in the layman's terms and under Webster, but under the legal terminology of how it's defined by the commission and its explanation and justifications, it's something different than what it is in Webster's.
Well, let me ask you maybe a little more specifically. So, I'm an independent expenditure maker, and I've got an ad, and I walk it up to you privately, and I show it to you, and I say, if I could raise more money, I can obviously put this ad more points behind this ad. I need to get support, financial support for this ad. Okay. You then turn around and speak to a large group and say, Goodman's got an ad. It's a great ad. Goodman needs more support for financial support for the ad. I encourage you to give to Goodman so that he can get his ad up in more media markets. I've seen the ad. You're saying that's not assent?
No. And, okay. Here's why. I think something like that happens all the time. When this commission correctly allowed candidates and office holders to solicit up to $5,000 for super PACs, to say that those candidates were totally unaware of the activities of those super PACs is just preposterous. I mean, when President Obama raised money for Priorities USA 4 years ago, he was certainly aware of the ads. at least the public ones, and what we're talking about are public ads, but at least proposals. It's on a website. So to say that, for me to answer your question and say that's improper would be going in a reverse direction of things that this commission has already said is okay, which is once again to say that if a candidate and a federal candidate or office holder is allowed to solicit up to $5,000 for a super PAC, that it's supposed to just bury its head in the sand and not know what that super PAC's doing. Of course they know. That's preposterous to think otherwise. So this commission, once it took that step, and once again, I think it was the right step. And so I'm a little remiss. I hope Commissioner Weintraub is doing well. I'm glad she's on the phone. But I remember working with her staff on that AO, and it was the right decision. So if that's a caveat that needs to be put in place for my client's request, that when you make these solicitations, when the federal candidate or office holder makes these solicitations, they need to include that requisite disclaimer that's required under majority PAC, sure, because the federal office holder candidate can only raise up to $5,000. But it would be beyond belief to suggest that what's going on right now with federal candidates and office holders soliciting for super PACs, that they're totally unaware of the projects, and there's not some at least implicit acknowledgement of what that super PAC is doing. I mean, they're not going to go and spend their time off the campaign trail and raise money for a super PAC if they don't like what that super PAC's doing. Why would they?
Yeah. Commissioner Goodman.
Does it make a difference in your mind? I take it doesn't, but humor me for a minute. If a candidate solicits general support for a super PAC, but not for a specific communication, because remember, we have a coordinated communication regulation that's specific about communications. So, one read of those prior AOs is that, yes, a candidate can ask that people support a super PAC. It seems like it might be a different question. You can correct me if I'm wrong. When the candidate is raising money for a specific communication supporting that candidate, having been apprised of that communication, that specific communication, when it gets down to that level, now, does that level of specificity matter at all in the realm of looking at whether something was suggested and assented to versus a general, hey, they're doing good work at the XYZ Super PAC. Hope you all support them. I can only ask up to $5,000. Please don't construe my request for more than $5,000. Thank you very much. Good night. Those seem to be qualitatively or substantively different communications.
Commissioner, I would say whatever differences there are in the abstract, they wash away immediately in practicality. Right. I mean, that's just once again, these candidates and office holders, when they're raising money, are aware of the specific ads that those candidates are wearing. And where are they supposed to draw the line? Oh, I really like what they're doing, or I really like what they're doing on taxation, or I really like that one ad. Where is the line? And it's been a few years when this commission had to rewrite the solicitation regs after Shays 3, and that was a painful process. And a lot of compromises were made there. And once again, I think the rules that came out of that were as good as they could be per the Shays 3 decision. But one thing that the commission didn't want to wade into was trying to make those kind of differences, trying to strike lines of exactly the words a federal office holder could and could not say when they were soliciting. You're allowed to say this, but you're not allowed to say that. I mean, once again, this commission has enough on its hands dealing with express advocacy and having to come in and deal with ads every single time about whether something trips, 100.22A or B. But are you going to start looking at like the very nuanced words that a candidate says at a fundraiser, or complaints going to start being filed where, wow, I think that candidate, that federal officer, went over the line when they raised for that super PAC because they were talking a little bit more specific than just we like what the super PAC's doing in general, they like what they're doing on this specific issue, or we like what they're doing with that specific communication. So with all of that, I think once again, It's easier. It's much more logical. It's much more consistent with E&J. It's much more practical to do as far as enforcement's concerned, is just to do what the E&J says and treat a sense the same as requests or suggestions, that they have to be private and they have to be specific. And once again, all of this conversation is presuming that merely informing, as was put here, merely informing by sending an email with a public URL is a request or suggestion. We think it's not. It's just information.
Well, you talked about drawing a line. Sometimes lines are hard to draw. I agree. But without opening up all the Pandora's box of all the circumstances that could flow or could occur from my very general example versus a very specific, your request is about a specific solicitation for a specific ad.
Part
I don't have to worry about a lot of other lines that might have to be drawn to consider this request, which is a link that underlying the link is a very specific solicitation for a very specific ad, right? I mean, that's what the link links to, is here's an ad and here's a donate button to support that ad. So I don't know that I have to answer all the other questions, you know, nuanced, what people say and how specific they become to understand this one. So let's focus on this one, you know, your clients. I guess, so you're arguing that in order to be a cent in this context, given these facts, a specific ad and a specific solicitation for this ad, the fact that I turn around and ask people, if I'm the candidate, to donate to this project is not a cent. Why?
Because if they do,
I needed to turn around and tell your client, yes, I really do want you to disseminate that ad. Is that?
No, I think there's other ways of doing it. Here's the thing: is that what we're proposing, what could happen is if we send the email that's written in question one, and once again, 3A is broken into many. 3 is broken into many parts, and we think each one should be dealt separately. Conflating them together was, I think the incorrect way of doing this. Especially because 3A and one are pretty much the same question, and that was done intentionally. But nevertheless, I think the deal with the issue that you're speaking to, Commissioner Goodman, is that what would be problematic is instead of my client sending the email and the authorized committee, instead of just blasting it out, putting it on their website, their public website, or blasting it far and wide or putting it on their Facebook page, if they were to send it to a select list, to their donor list, to a very small group, their people, their bundlers, or something like that, oh, wow, here's this, please check it out, I think that becomes problematic.
So just to be clear, if IE Maker takes the specific ad and the specific request for funding for the ad, gives it to the candidate, and the candidate sends it out to the candidate's donor list, that could be a cent?
I think that becomes more problematic because of the way that it's structured in the ENJ. The ENJ talks to about a select audience. That becomes a select audience. The details matter and all of these things, but I think that becomes more of a select audience. Posting it on its website is the quintessential non-select audience.
Okay.
Even which is in the ENJ.
Thank you,
Commissioner Rabel, Commissioner Hunter.
Yeah. Do you want to go? You asked some of the questions that I think are important to be asked, Commissioner Goodman, and as well as you, Commissioner Peters. And I think one of the things that strikes me about these is that your concern about all this, the questions being separated out, doesn't resonate to me, because it seems like you are actually have. And I don't mean to use scheme in a nefarious way, but that it is actually all part of a scheme. I mean, a kind of a scheme. And so for me, I think one of the problems that we have here is that, and I did not participate in that previous decision with respect to fundraising for super PACs. So I'm not sure that I agree with that to begin with, but it seems that some of what you're asking here conflicts with what the courts have said very clearly about coordination and about, you know, the importance of independence, and that it can't be just a wink and a nod, and which is essentially what this seems to be proposing. So I have a concern about dealing with this matter in, given what you yourself have said about the ENJ and about the lack of clarity in the ENJ with respect to some of the questions that you're asking, to deal with this issue in an AO and in an expedited way relating to the campaign. And I know that, you know, you have every right to ask it, and we have to make a decision one way or the other, but that's what I see as problematic, because I do think that there are some nuances here that need to be examined. And this may not, and complexities, I know you say he's asking for a specific thing, and he is, but this specific thing may have ramifications, and to look at it in the context of an AEO procedurally, I think, is problematic for us, given the lack of clear enunciation of some way forward on these questions in the ENJ. And personally, I think it would be more appropriate for us to look at these issues just in general in a rulemaking. But beyond that, I would go with the version A myself, if that's what we must do.
One thing at this point that I should probably mention, and the vice chairman brought this up as well, that in light of the representation that was made in your comments, it might be wise for council to just update or put out a new draft in light of the clarification that's been made by requester as to how we're supposed to break out the different elements, especially of question three, just to make sure that there's greater clarity as to what's being asked and what's being answered.
We've discussed this somewhat, and we're not entirely sure how to reconcile the comment with the request in that sense.
Okay. I guess I should find, in what way is it, can you not reconcile the two? I mean,
there's language in the request that indicates that there's certain communication that's going to be made, and then the question asks, what about the actions that may flow after that communication? And I think there's some tension between the way the request describes the communication and the way the comment describes the communication.
I guess I would ask Mr. McCurry, I'd assume that the way that you phrase it in the comment is the way that that you intended it, and if we were to update a draft setting forth the questions consistent with the way your comment reads, that this reflects the better understanding of what was intended by your request.
That's yes, Mr. Chairman, that is correct. I mean, I will say that What is readily apparent to me is that a part of this misunderstanding and this confusion lies in the fact of that we obviously believe the way that things were put in our original request made a lot more sense, were a lot more clear, and if that had been accepted by the Office of General Counsel and not been determined to be a third party request, we think inappropriately, then some of this could have been resolved a lot earlier.
Okay. Commissioner Hunter.
I wanted to go back. Welcome, Troy. It's good to see you. Go back to some of the questions that Commissioner Goodman was asking. He was getting into the details. Your discussion was getting into the details with, you know, who's the audience, who's being talked to, is the email private, all this kind of stuff. But one of the things I think he was getting at is the specificity of what's in the email that you held up. The link is to a specific ad, as Commissioner Goodman mentioned. And does that become problematic, or would it be different, maybe for some people, if the link wasn't to a page that was so specific, if it didn't link to an exact ad and it more linked to, this is a great organization, they do good stuff, and they care about tax reform and all this kind of stuff, which maybe is more akin to what was said in some of the AOs that we were just talking about. You can show up and support a group and ask for $5,000. You know, we didn't get into the details of, and I agree with you, we don't want to. We're reluctant to do that, but we weren't presented that question. You were able to come to the Super PAC and say, they're doing great stuff, we want to ask for $5,000. So I wonder if your email, because it links to a specific ad, changes the analysis.
Well, no, Commissioner Hunter, I don't think that it does, and for one aspect, that's problematic. What you're suggesting is problematic because that's just not how my client operates. It's set up the way it's set up for a specific reason. This is the thing that I would think everybody at the dais would appreciate is, for all the talk of dirty, dark money and all these things, my client, what it tries to do is the exact opposite of that. This is the brightest of money that can possibly have. These are small donors. It's set up to do for specific projects and encourage donors to not just give to, we're going to give to an organization and we never know what becomes of that money. It's going to specific projects, and that's how my client operates. So it would require, and this commission's dealt with this too, of asking requesters to change its line of work, its line of business, in order to get a different answer for an advisory opinion request. And so as it stands right now, my client is not interested in doing that. It's been contemplated to have, is there a way to, for Citizen Super PAC to accept money generically to have a landing page that isn't specific ads. But if my client did that, and its reluctance to do that right now would be because that would change its entire business model. So that's the problem for my client in doing that. But once again, the real crux of the issue is I guess several fold is the link, is providing the link itself, which once again is public information. There's no reason to say, and part of question three supposes some of this is, what if a third party, what if a authorized committee stumbled upon the Citizen Super PAC? What if they just have a staffer and that's their job? Once a day, get on Citizen Super PAC's website and see if there's any projects. If there is, maybe we want to do something with that. Is my client in danger? Is my client in danger of running afoul of the act if that happens? Taking the email of question one out of the picture, that still hasn't been answered. Are we in violation of the act if, unbeknownst to us, a authorized committee promotes via Facebook or its own website or whatever, publicly, a project on Citizen Super PAC? We think not. And then does it become a problem? So that's really the real first step. The next is it a problem if we provide them that hyperlink ourselves? Once again, we think not. I mean, it's just, we really believe, as question one is answered in draft B, is that it is. It's just merely informing. The Christian Coalition really deals with this issue. The Christian Coalition was speaking to some of the campaigns, were pretty friggin' specific about their actions, and it was just like, okay, and they walked away. They didn't sent privately, for sure. That would have been problematic. The court found that there was not a violation there. So, that's what I would say for Commissioner Ravel's, comment about that there's cases to suggest that this was problematic. I would love to know what those cases are in order to deal with that issue, but the only case that I know that deals with specifically this issue is Christian Coalition. So I hope that answers your question, Commissioner, but like I said, it's somewhat of a practical problem because this is how my client's business plan operates, and two, is this really, is it a problem if an authorized committee does it on its own? Yes or no? We think no. And if that's okay, then what's the problem with us just sending them an email and saying, pointing them out something that's public?
I guess if I could follow, sure. I guess I agree. Nobody's interested, at least many of us aren't interested in telling requesters to change their business model. But does the link that you're talking about link to the ad for one specific member of Congress? It's just to the one ad.
It's the link that's provided is to the link to the Joe Heck for Senate.
Right. Okay.
Project.
As opposed to a menu of advertisements that somebody could choose from. So I'm not suggesting that people should be, you should change your business model and say you should be able to give, you know, $50 to the slush fund, you know, to whatever overhead or whatever they're doing. I'm not suggesting that, but I wonder if the analysis is a little different. If, again, you're sending a link to that specific ad or a link to the menu of choices that are before someone.
I'm not going to suggest that that's an unreasonable way to. I'm not going to suggest that's unreasonable that the analysis changed somewhat. So I don't think it's unreasonable for any of this. I mean, like I said, this is nuanced, and there's lots of thresholds that happen, lots of changes in the facts matter, and that's what I mean. Honestly, like, what? How more specific can we be to have an advisory opinion request? I mean, if every time that somebody comes in for something like this and requires a rulemaking, let's be honest, the track record for rulemaking this place is not good recently. So advisory opinion request is the best way to do this. I really wish I had Mark Elias' transcript from his comment that he made to that allegation about his scheme in House Majority PAC and Senate Majority PAC and the need to do a rulemaking. My client has a right to ask a question, a specific set of facts. But for your purposes, Commissioner, yeah, I understand and that kind of nuanced difference. It's not an unreasonable suggestion the analysis change, and if that's what requires for the commission, especially if it requires four votes of the commission to say, well, you know what, the URL you provided, we got a real problem with www.citizensuperpac.com/176, and had it been, you know, Nevada, where it's the Nevada projects or something like that, as any requester will do, they'll take what they can get. And if that's the kind of nuanced difference that, you know, the specific project is the problem, but a menu per race or menu per, you know, region or district or state or what have you, if that's the nuanced, you know, requirement to decrease the specificity of a public assent, then sure.
Then what?
Then sure. I mean, well, like I said, well, we are not here. You know, it was funny when we put this request, talking to friends of mine, you know, kind of trying to ask what our motivation was for doing this. It's not to try to get away with some sort of scheme. We really had a question here that wasn't answered. And so, you know, we're not here. We don't want, I know what a 3-3 split looks like, and I know what that's good for. It's not what we're here for. We would like the commission's consensus here. We want, you know, an affirmation of at least four commissioners. So in order to get that fourth vote, if it requires that in the analysis to question three, any part of question three, specifically 3B, which deals with the promotion of the hyperlink, well, the hyperlink needs to be different, or it's a problem here because it's too specific, because it's too much of a project, and some explanation for that, then, you know, well, that's better than nothing.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Chair.
Yes. Commissioner Ravel.
Thank you for the invitation to tell you about cases that I'm relying on. And first, let me say, I by the use of the word scheme, I was in no way intending, as I said, to impugn your client's motives. I'm not concerned about the fact that, and what you represent is, I'm sure, quite true, that they're trying to do something above board by asking this question. What I am concerned about, because you refer reasonably to the track record of this commission on being able to regulate, and I acknowledge that and agree with that, but the problem is that then if we do come to some conclusions on an AO of this sort, it is used for others other than your client. So that's number one. But let me read to you a couple of quotes from some cases that I think, you know, are significant for us to think about when we look at what the independence from the candidate means with regard to independent expenditures. Buckley versus Vallejo itself says it must be done totally independently. Colorado Republican Federal Campaign Committee versus FEC, not pursuant to any general or particular understanding. General is an important word. I already mentioned not a wink and a nod, which is from FEC versus Colorado case as well. And then Citizens United itself was pretty strongly stated about the need for full independence as a basis for acknowledging that it's okay to have independent expenditures. So I feel pretty strongly about that concept, which is one of the reasons that I'm concerned, and it is, once again, not about your clients per se.
Commissioner Goodman? Always. Oh, Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thanks. I don't have much more, but I did want to say, as you know, when we put these EJs together, we're not in a position always to agree on every possible factual scenario that exists, as you well know, and so, you know, we're stuck with sometimes a compromise that we can generally provide guidance for, but they're neither law nor not necessarily precisely the way things have to be viewed, and under all factual circumstances, things do change. And I know it would be nice if we could give you a black and white answer to a lot of things, as well as other requesters come in for, but it is, most of these are pretty factual sensitive, and in a case like this, I think it is too. But I have a question with respect to the idea of why it has to be private. Where does that come from?
That's from the E&J, Commissioner.
And how private would it be in this case?
It's a select audience.
It has to be a select audience. Select in what way? By inviting everybody in the newspaper to come to a rally, or to come to a fundraiser, or to just come over to somebody's house?
I'll agree with you, Commissioner, that's part of the nuance. But what it does say, I'm just pulling the actual quote from the E&J that is cited in our request, is that what it does say that is not coordinated is when it's public. So I don't know how more public something can be when it's promoted on the web or promoted on the Facebook. I mean, the E&J speaks to, you know, wide audiences, spoken at a crowd, things of that nature. Intended to cover requests or suggestions made to a select audience, but not those offered to the public generally.
So anything that goes on somebody else's website is fair game, even if it's just mentioned in some kind of a passing reference, and it's clear
if
that...
If it's publicly accessible...
Suppose there's a website that somebody's previous campaign fundraiser has his own pack and his or her own pack, and they develop a movie that's cost several $100,000, or you have some celebrity that serves as a character reference, and really that thing couldn't get promoted generally unless it was hitting a website that has a lot of hits, such as the candidate itself. And could the candidate just assume that that's is there any line to be drawn between when that could be used and when not?
What my client is requesting is not some sort of secret private website. I think that's what you're suggesting, and I know
I'm not suggesting that. It could be a website. It's one anybody can reach. It's just one that not many people may know about.
Commissioner, I assure you more than I can, and I would encourage you to check out my client's website. That if you want to find these projects, they're readily available. You can go to the website.
I'm not asking for an argument over what your client's doing. I'm just trying to get your sense of where you think the lines are drawn.
I think that my client is on the right side of the line, wherever the line is. Our client's website is publicly accessible. There's nothing hidden. There's no passwords to get behind some sort of firewall or any sort of screen. If you go to the website just itself, citizensuperpac.com, and search for a project, it'll pop up. It's not hard to find. So if there is a line to be drawn, it would be beyond that. You know, if it's something where, you know, some secret website or some crazy URL or something of that nature, that would certainly be a different set of circumstances that I could think the commission would probably look at that differently. But from what my client is proffering is a website that not only is public but readily accessible and easy to find.
Commissioner Goodman?
Troy, I didn't understand your request. You mentioned this in answer to someone's question, but I didn't understand you to ask the question, what if a candidate unilaterally and without any email or link or any type of possible suggestion, request, or communication with the Super PAC, if the candidate unilaterally or some campaign staffer sends this out to people? I didn't understand you to ask that question. In other words, I will just express an opinion from the table. There's if you're just sitting there passively and a candidate does that, I don't see how anyone can construe that to find the one half of the coordination conduct, you know, that would then prevent you from speaking. So, but I didn't understand that question to be asked here.
And Commissioner Goodman, I apologize for that. I believe that the request as initially submitted was a little clearer on that topic. I think the rewrite of the request that you have before you now, after I had to go through an excruciating conversation, and I will say this, I do want to say this, because I hadn't said it before, but I want to say it, that I enjoyed working with Ms. Selenkoff on this. She was always a professional. I enjoyed working with her while I was here, but she's a good lawyer, and she was gracious and very, very professional. But we had an excruciatingly long conversation on dealing with what a third-party request is. And at the end of that, and there's no, just to remind the commission, I'm sure you're well aware, there's no appeal process for that. You're stuck. You have to rewrite your request in order to get this to before the commission. And I realized we had to take some extraordinary, you know, actions in order to try to move this along a little further. But we knew we were working up against the 60-day hard deadline before the election. And every time you get kicked back by OGC, the clock starts anew. So we were in time constraints. I will take some of the fault on some of this because the draft had to be rewrote at 2 a.m. in order to accommodate this timing. But I do believe that the initial request, as proffered, made this a little clearer. We kind of let it open-ended and let the commission run with it. So it's good to hear you say that at the dais, Commissioner, and hopefully more commissioners agree with that premise. We would love to see at least that, because the problem here is really what my commissioner wants to, what my client wants to do is question number one: can we hit send on an email? Can we hit send on an email? And if not, then okay. But what do we need? Do we really need to be worried about what? You know, do we need to worry about withdrawing projects if we find out an authorized committee has posted our project on Facebook? So I get it's there's a lot of iterations of all of this, and that becomes problematic for the commission to go through each one of these questions with different sides of, you know, different iterations within questions. But if four or more commissioners believe what you just stated, that if it happens by happenstance, you know, the terminology that was pulled by OGC from then, you know, staffer Scalia, that would be great to know. At least have a little bit of comfort of knowing that we don't have to worry about pulling projects if we become aware of something. But nevertheless, I think this would have been clear.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
If that question was asked, I believe the requester would be entitled to an answer to that subtle or nuanced, discrete question, along with the others, and we ought to provide that answer. I'm not aware of the procedural history that may have submerged or that question, but that seems like a legitimate question someone would want to know. I can't speak for everyone. It's pretty clear in my mind what the regulatory consequence of that would be. I would think that someone has a right to know and have the clarity of an advisory opinion to know whether they can speak just because somebody unilaterally and without any involvement did something. So I think that if that was put to the commission, I think we if we're going to take more time with this, we ought to probably provide an answer to that as well.
Yeah, because I agree that I didn't understand the request to incorporate that either, and to me that's an easy answer because you can't control what someone might stumble across in the papers, on the web, what have you. And if there were a committee that were to take certain actions on without your knowledge and without your invitation or anything, I just can't see how in any stretch of the words of the regulation that could be considered coordinated. But you know, to the extent we needed to clarify that in the draft,
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Commissioner.
Are there any other questions that you were looking for answers for that didn't make it into questions 1, 2, and 3 before us in drafts A and B?
No, Commissioner Goodman. I after this, and here's the thing: is that, you know, there is obviously confusion before I sat down at the table today, and this would have been, it seems to me that this would have been the appropriate way to deal with the, you know, collegial back and forth that Ms. Selenkoff and I had to tease some of this stuff out. Instead, it was, you know, our follow up response was dealing with some sort of, like, I will use Commissioner Ravel's words here, like we're trying to do some scheme. We mentioned that, you know, this won't satisfy the conduct prong in terms of former employee, or, and we mentioned just employee employee and thought it's on its own. Like, what do you mean employee or independent contractor as well? Like, no, we're not trying to play games here. Obviously, that wouldn't have the beneficial shield of the AO if we went around and like, oh, pierce the conduct prong with an independent contractor. But just so everyone's clear, you know, and I guess there was some, and look, I worked here for a while. I can only, you know, smoke signals are what they are, and you can only guess. And believe me, from just 3.5 months separation, it's hard to read smoke signals, especially in what's, you know, it's 2 weeks out from an election day. And I don't want to spend, you know, time and bill my client for something on draft day. I'd be perfectly honest with you, thought draft day was a false flag. I didn't think it was a real answer. I still don't think it's a real answer. It doesn't even answer questions 1 and 2. The cleverness of, oh, will you reference these questions in question three, so we're not going to answer them? Frankly, that's too cute by half and quite a disservice, and frankly, I think lacking a little bit of good faith. And it's really, really troubling. When I saw that, I was flabbergasted. And I didn't feel like I should be spending time hitting on something like that, because I know that's the practice of the commission. The commission is supposed to put out drafts, you know, a week out. And I know that some commissioners want to do that regardless of if a draft has support or not. I assume that's what had happened. Because I couldn't believe that the commission would actually respond to a requester by totally ignoring two of its three questions. So I don't want to bill my client for that time. I thought that, well, my time here suggested that when something like that happens, what it really means is, okay, there's something that's thrown out, but there were no other drafts. To me, my experience, that meant there were negotiations going on. And I was going to lambast draft A for a waste of money when I figured that commissioners were negotiating here on the ninth floor. So until I saw draft B last night and saw it at 6:30, did I realize that draft A actually had substance. But I will say one thing else about draft A, and this has kind of happened too, is that during our conversations, my conversations with the Office of General Counsel, it was suggested to me that my client should rephrase, not just have to rephrase it because it was a third-party request, but the better course of action here would have been to rewrite it in a way that just laid out all the facts, laid it all out, and didn't ask any questions until the very end. Just lay it all out. What are you going to do? All these things, all these interactions, blah, 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 and just ask at the end, is this okay? I was not going to do that. My client has specific questions, and I want them asked. And so when I saw draft A, you know what draft A told me? Draft A was OGC's response to my client's request the way that OGC wanted my client to make his request. It wasn't answering. Not taking aside the confusion, it wasn't actually answering the request that we had proffered, not to mention the fact that it ignored questions 1 and 2.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Commissioner Goodman.
Before we received your supplemental comment, I was sympathetic to draft B. And implicit in draft B is I thought your client deserved an answer to every question posed. As a former practitioner, there's a reason to ask each gradation of activity and to get an answer on each gradation. Now, what you see in draft B, however, is a regulatory consequence depending on what happens after you engage in conduct that is asked in questions 1 and 2. But now you've clarified some of what you're asking. I don't know whether it changes that regulatory consequence, but if you have another question and it was presented to the commission, I think there's a fourth question. The commission owes you an answer to that as well, whether it's favorable or unfavorable to the way your client wants to operate.
Mr. Noddy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The original request was circulated to the commissioners on September 6th at 4:32 p.m. That request does not ask at any point about the scenario where the candidate unilaterally posts the information. All three questions in that request, which are not that different from the three questions that were ultimately submitted, implicate communications from the requester to the candidates committee. The unilateral question is not in there.
And just to clarify, just from my perspective on the drafts, the way that the questions were and the way the analysis was presented based on the question in draft A, I was leaning more towards draft B, but it wasn't based on the way the question. I had understood the questions that you had asked in the in your request, I guess the September 9th request, consistent with that. And so that was our misunderstanding. I don't think that that was necessarily bad faith, or I think that that was just the result of confusion. And I think that the clarification that you provided last night helps clear up some of that confusion so that we know how to best answer that question. I think as to the extent that, though, that you've also been seeking answers to the to a question about a candidate, authorized committee party, some other entity stumbling across your website, and then linking to that in your website, sending out emails, sending out solicitations to, you know, give money to this, you know, to this project. I think that if we needed to answer that, if that's part of what you're seeking in this request, I think that that's, to my mind, a fairly easy question to answer. But I hadn't understood that either, and I didn't. And like I said, I think that there was some confusion as to the precise nature of the questions being asked, and I think now that we have that clarification, we can give a more fulsome answer to what it is you're seeking.
I appreciate that, Mr. Chairman. I will just say that I do believe that the rephrasing of question three partly causes some of this confusion. I mean, once again, the way that it was initially styled, question three was, may an authorized committee place an internet hyperlink on its own website to Citizen Super PAC's advertisement project and stop? I mean, that's the question. Can it do so? So there's obviously different iterations in that on its own in response to the email in question one that could have been teased out. I think that the rephrasing of this, the way that it ties in, that it has to be tied into my client, is my client going to be a violation of the act if these things happen? Once again, I still think it's open-ended, but it becomes less clearly so.
Commissioner Hunter?
I mean, we didn't see this question, as we've discussed. I'm a little curious as to why you would ask that, because it seems pretty clear that the answer is yes, but I don't know if my colleagues have had a chance to think about it, you know, sitting here.
Commissioner Hunter, I think that I have a hard time telling my client anything's really right. Clear in this environment, especially when I don't have a MRR site, frankly.
Right.
That's got an SOR attached to it or a fourth vote. It's hard to me to count on anything. And once again, my client's different. It's just a different nature what it's doing. It's producing specific ads on a platform asking people to do things. It's just different than what other super PACs do or other entities. So there is a concern that, you know, do we have to be concerned if we've noticed that an authorized committee is promoting us in any way? Even if we don't, we would at least prompt them, inform them of these projects. But if they stumble across themselves, do we need to be concerned about that? I don't. I hope not. But I can't bank on that.
Putting aside the substance for a minute, I think it might be useful to talk about the procedures for a minute.
Sure.
You know, obviously the election is less than 2 weeks away.
Sure.
Obviously you're not getting an answer today. So what is the timeline? And, you know, obviously we want to answer all of your questions, but is there, you know, maybe some of them are easier to answer than others? You know, is there some kind of triage? The question about just like, what if this guy does it? And then the second question about, what about your email? Maybe we could turn that around in the next day or two. And the other ones that are a little bit more sophisticated, maybe that might take a couple more days. I'm just trying to get you an answer.
Sure.
In a way that will be useful for the election. Because at some point, and I don't know, and this is my second part of my question, at what point does the answer do you no good?
Right. I mean, that's just a timing factor. We're obviously really close. I mean, the project that we're speaking of here can be turned around pretty quickly if it meets its fundraising goal. But, you know, frankly, you know, in order to actually purchase the spaces on Facebook and actually have it done, my client needs to be – it's got to be before the Monday before the election. So that's really Friday if you're dealing with business. So that's a week from tomorrow.
Sorry, I couldn't hear what you said.
A week from Friday. A week from tomorrow. Next Friday. That's the Friday.
Your would be the last.
That's the Friday before the election.
And you could, it would be at least helpful for you to get it by then.
It would be at least helpful for you to get it by then. To answer your first question, as far as triage is concerned, yeah, question number one is the most important. Question number one on itself is the most important, and then we would really, you know, we believe 3A and 1 are entirely related. I mean, that was kind of written in the same. It's like, if we can do 1, can we really do 1? So 1 and 3A, I think, go hand in hand. And then 3B, 3B is, you know, in 3B, we phrase it as put the link on the candidate's own website. But we would not believe it would be materially distinguishable to say that they could publicize it other ways, Facebook, Twitter, et cetera. So 1, 3A, 3B.
And then are you including in this the question that's not
– Yeah, so we think 3B actually is open-ended, and it was more clearly so to begin with, that if an authorized committee does that, does what 3B says it's going to do, is that okay?
Okay.
And so we envision the answer to be somewhat iterative of, well, sure, it's definitely okay if the committee does it on its own. Citizen Super PAC will not be in violation of the Act because of coordinated contribution. If it emails as referenced in question one, we would still think the answer would be okay. And that's really it.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Vice Chairman.
Yeah, I have a question. The draft that we're seeing, is that your first draft? Is that what you originally proposed to us?
I'm sorry, Vice Chairman.
That your draft was modified based upon our conversations with the Office of General Counsel staff?
That's correct.
So what are we reading now?
Which you have before you, that is the request itself. That's dated September 9th. That's my reworded request.
So
there, you know how these things are pre-AORs when they come in the door? So this is the actual AOR. This was pre-AOR version 2.
Okay. So what areas of our conversation did you rely on in modifying the request?
Well, I was told by the Office of General Counsel that my initial request was at least partially a third-party request, so it had to be rephrased in order to comply with 11 CFR 122.112.
And what else is there? I mean, it's of interest to me to know where you started out and where you ended up after you talked to our office, because that may or may not be, you know, what, as a commission generally, we would agree with.
As far as what, sir?
What was the methodology that took place here?
Yeah, I mean, you have a copy of that draft. It's in your email. It gets circulated around. I didn't bring it with me because it's not before you, technically.
Well, I know what you're saying.
But, you know, the claim was made that because the way that we rephrased question 3, that was a third-party request. I still disagree with that, adamantly disagree with that, I think for two reasons. One, when you deal with coordination, you by nature are dealing with a third party. And, of course, if my client's going to be in violation of the Act because of a third party's actions, we have a right to ask that question. The second and most important reason is that bridge or that dam, whatever existed, let's be honest, has been blown through the water. This commission has dealt with, and for better or worse, I really don't care. But all I can do is operate under precedent, is that the commission has addressed issues that are exceptionally hypothetical and exceptionally third party. I list them in the footnote that's in the request. All I can do as an attorney to my client is base off precedent of where the commission has actually addressed issues and addressed questions in the past. And in my reading, and having been here and had these conversations, we made it perfectly clear, well, if this isn't a third-party request and if this isn't a hypothetical request, nothing is. So the commission obviously has its prerogative to set standards and say what is and what isn't a hypothetical question or what is and what is not a third-party request. Please do so and standardize it and apply it equally. But to allow requesters to come in with exceptionally hypothetical and third-party requests on one instance and then not do the same or require us to rewrite it in order to get it before you is just not equal treatment under the law. It's arbitrary and capricious by definition. I don't know how to challenge that. I don't know if that's challengeable in court, but as far as just principles of justice are concerned, it's wholly unfair.
Thanks. Yeah, I do appreciate that.
I don't know whether Mr. Noddy wants to weigh in on this, but let me just say for my part, in what I read in your original request, I think some of your comments about our Office of General Counsel are really off the mark.
because that's how I would have read it as well. And reading it again while we're sitting here, I think that given the language that you have in your first advisory opinion request dated September 9th, their response has been absolutely consistent with what you've written, and I really take issue with your criticizing their behavior in this. I really think that it's inappropriate. And I don't know, would you like to weigh
Mr.
in?
Mr. Noddy?
I can confirm that the Office of General Counsel.
Is that somebody
joining
me? In?
Someone introducing a tension breaker in the situation.
We did inform counsel that there were aspects of the original draft that were not complete under Part 112. And as I mentioned, all commissioners have the original draft and can compare it to the submitted draft and can see what the differences are. I would suggest that they're not that significant, and it's pretty clear what aspects of the original draft required changing and were, in fact, changed.
Well, I'm going to go back and take a look. I've got to admit that my focus had been on the September 9th draft, and you said the original was September 6th. So I'll go back and take a look at that. Obviously, we're going to need some more time to go through this, and I'll also just address the issue. I think this is susceptible to an advisory opinion. I mean, by definition, every rulemaking is going to be of a certain general level that isn't going to identify specific factual scenarios that are not that could not have been reasonably foreseeable under those regulations. That's frankly why we have an advisory opinion process, to try to give some guidance as to how those rules are going to be applied in practice. And so I don't think that we should necessarily I raised some questions about some wiggle room in the joints, but that's by definition the reason why we have advisory opinions, is because you're coming to us with a question that isn't clearly and specifically answerable under either our precedent, under the terms of the rule itself, under the explanation and justification underlying that rule. So I don't see anything inappropriate about answering this. In fact, I think this is exactly why we have an advisory opinion process. But like we said, we'll need to have some more time to go through this and hope to get something as quickly as possible. We may need to keep lines of communication open between OGC and yourself regarding what timing is realistic. But because at this point I can't promise anything in particular, but obviously we'll try to be as expeditious as possible.
Mr. Chairman, can you hear me?
Yes, Commissioner Weintraub.
Could I just weigh in for a sec?
Sure.
Thank you. I apologize. It's a little bit more complicated than I thought to participate remotely in these meetings. But I just wanted to say a couple of things. One is I think Mr. McCurry should listen to his mother more. She sounds like a very wise woman. Secondly, I want to join in the comments of Commissioner Ravel. I think when a requester comes in and starts talking about how the commission is raising false flags and I think I wrote down a couple of the phrases that were used here, that the draft is too cute by half, lacking good faith. We don't put out drafts in bad faith, and you should really know better than that, Mr. McCurry, and I take strong exception to that characterization. You're not doing your cause any favors by casting aspersions on our staff in that way. I came to this meeting prepared to vote for draft day. I'm happy to, I understand people want some more time to take another look see whether a fuller response might be warranted, and I'm obviously happy to do that. But I did want to just make that comment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Well, we'll hold this matter over for either a resolution between now and the next open meeting. If it doesn't have any resolution, even though it'll be post the election, we will sometime between now and the next meeting will have this resolved, hopefully sooner rather than later. Ms. Selenkoff?
Thank you, Chairman Peterson. The deadline for the advisory opinion as of now is November 14th, and the next meeting is, I believe, the 17th or 18th.
Okay.
So we may need to get a very short extension of time if we're going to
push it to the next meeting. But we'll have to hammer that out here at the commission about the time frame in which we're going to resolve this. So, anyway, anything further? Thank you, Mr. McCurry.
Thank you.
We'll turn next to item 2 on our agenda, which is Draft Advisory Opinion 2016-11, Plains Cotton Growers, Inc. and Plains Cotton Growers Political Action Committee. We have Tony Buckley from the Office of General Counsel to give us a presentation, and
I think we're still on
the morning side of noon, so I can still say good morning to you.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I believe we have the requester's representative on the phone as well.
Okay. Is it
Mr. Bissent, are you on the phone?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Good morning to you, Mr. Bissent.
Good morning.
All right, Mr. Buckley, when you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, commissioners. Agenda document 16-51-A contains a draft advisory opinion responding to a request from Plains Cotton Growers Incorporated and its separate segregated fund PCG PAC. They ask whether PCG may serve as a collecting agent for PCG PAC and whether their proposed method of soliciting contributions is permissible under the Act and Commission regulations. The draft concludes that PCG, as the connected organization of PCG PAC, may act as a collecting agent for the SSF. The draft further concludes that PCG may contract with cotton gins to collect and forward contributions to PCG PAC as proposed, because neither the Act nor the Commission's regulations limit how a membership organization may facilitate contributions from its members to its SSF. Finally, the draft concludes that the proposed solicitation letter is permissible because it would only suggest a guideline for contributions and it would inform recipients about the solicitation as required by Commission regulations. The Commission received no comments on the request or on the draft. Thank you. I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Buckley. Are there any questions of counsel or any discussion on this draft? I'm comfortable with the draft that's been released. Mr. Bissent, do you have any comments that you would like to offer with respect to the draft that's been made public?
Just appreciate y'all's time and consideration.
Okay. Hearing no discussion, do we have a motion? Commissioner Hunter.
I move approval of Draft Advisory Opinion 2016-11.
Is there any discussion on that motion? If none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed?
Aye.
Madam Secretary, that motion carries by a vote of 6-0.
Could I just say, Mr. Chair, that
yes,
I want to say to Mr. Bissent, thank you for all your extensive attachments on this AO. I thought it was fascinating to read about your cotton gin members. So I appreciate it. It was interesting.
Thank you very much. Thank you all for your interest as well.
Thank you for submitting your request and being available this morning.
Yes, sir.
We'll turn next to item 3 on our agenda, which is Draft Advisory Opinion 2016-14, and it's several state libertarian parties. I won't go through and name every last one. We have Joe Wensinger from the Office of General Counsel here, I think, for your second presentation.
Yes.
I remember your first one a little while ago, so yeah. you're basically a hardened veteran of this process, so we can just let fly with whatever, difficult queries we may have. So, although I have a suspicion this one may not be the case. So, when you're ready, please proceed.
I believe we have requester's counsel on the phone, too.
Okay.
Ms. Sirah, are you there?
This is Christina Sarai.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairman Peterson. Good morning, Commissioners. Agenda documents 1653A and 6053B are alternative draft responses to an advisory opinion request submitted by 11 Libertarian State Committees. The requesters ask whether, under the Act and Commission regulations, each of these committees qualifies as a state party committee of the Libertarian National Party. The drafts conclude that each requester does qualify as a state party committee of the National Party because, in addition to placing federal candidates on a ballot and being recognized as an affiliate by the National Committee. Each of the state committees provided bylaws or other governing documents showing that it is responsible for activities commensurate with the day-to-day functions of a political party at the state level. We did not receive any comments on the request or on the draft, and we also request that should the draft be approved, we be granted authority to make any necessary technical and conforming amendments. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you for that presentation, Mr. Wensinger. Are there any questions or discussion of commissioners? Ms. Zara, were there any comments that you had on the draft that was made public?
No, I just want to mention I don't believe we saw any substantive differences between draft B and draft A, and that's about it. And can I just clarify, at the beginning of the meeting, I believe there was a motion to extend consideration on Alabama specifically?
The motion at the outset was just to, since the most recent draft was circulated late under our regulations, we just had to make a motion to waive the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents so that we could consider draft B. That's the only thing that motion pertained to.
Oh, okay. I apologize. Thank you.
I'm glad you asked for that clarification.
Yeah, Mr. Chair,
Commissioner
Ravel raises a very important issue, and I'm just wondering what the rationale was for having a draft B, given that they are substantively the same.
I think the reasoning was just to move a particular paragraph earlier into the analysis. It appeared that made the analysis flow a little easier. I don't think substantially it led to a different result. It was just, I think, purely in terms of readability and analytical flow. So
we're following the style guide now.
That's right. Strunk and Whites. We all are.
Right.
So if there's no other discussion, do we have a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move approval of agenda document number 16-53-B.
Is there any discussion on that motion? If not, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Madam Secretary, that motion carries by a vote of 6-0. Thank you, Ms. Sarah, for being available to discuss this advisory opinion.
Thank you.
That leads us to our last agenda item, which is to ask Mr. Palmer, are there any management or administrative matters to consider?
Mr. Chairman, there are no such matters.
Hearing none, this meeting is adjourned.